So you're getting in the swing of things now that school has started.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
A lot going on downtown.
A lot's going on, and unfortunately, you're here on a Tuesday, right? On Saturday night, we had an amazing music fest on the square that was the fifth annual Greencastle Music Fest. And we had, my guess is, somewhere around 1,500 plus or minus a little bit on the square. The event was from 3 to 11. The exciting part about it was so multi-generational in its approach, from activities that were offered to opportunities for just families to be together in the earlier part of the day, and then three amazing bands that started to play at 5 o'clock that went to 11, and then the party moved inside. So that was a great way to kick off the season with the students all being back, their first week at school, beautiful summer night. And so, yeah, things are kicking off. We've got 2,300 plus people back from a summer hiatus, and that always increases the blood flow of a community. So it's been fun to watch things come to life again. So we've got other things on the square happening. That M Squared that opened with the Yo-Yo Ma ribbon cutting back in June, they are starting to do their preparatory music classes in there. So we'll have youngsters actually coming to the square instead of on campus to take lessons. We'll have performances that are going to be emanating from there. And a new concept, the director of the whole 21st Century Music Initiative is a man named Mark Rabidow. And Mark is bringing this weekend opera and wine to what we're calling Communiversity. So it's a chance for the university and the community to come together, this one geared for older adults, and an opportunity to learn a little bit about what makes opera exciting and has made it exciting for generations, and a little bit about wines from, I guess, traditional operatic areas in the world. So it's going to be an interesting evening, and I think just the beginning of a variety of different opportunities that are going to be made available through that effort.
And besides items with DePaul University, there have been some new city things opening up. I hear a new dog park is
New
coming.
dog park is opening up, really. They're finishing now. The finishing touches are going on as we speak. It's part of a DNR grant that the city had gotten at our Big Walnut Sports Park facility, and it's an effort to add to the opportunities for people who have animals that they typically have to walk on a leash here in town, which is obviously the preferred method unless you have a fenced yard, to take them out and have their dogs have a place to really run and to get some exercise. So they're putting the finishing touches on that, and they're going to be having a dog park, World Dog Park Day, and it's going to be tomorrow, and it's going to be Wednesday, the second day of September. And it again, it's at Big Walnut Sports Park, and the facility will be open and operating, and definitely want to encourage people to come out and try a new amenity that we have to offer them.
And we can't forget about Ivy Tech. I see where the Greencastle branch reporting a 12% increase. Where does that come from?
It's just wonderful to see. The hope has been that we could pull some of the people out of other regions, out of other places where they were taking some of their Ivy Tech classes, make the commute a little bit easier for them than it had been. And I think that word is finally getting out that we can offer a very solid 2-year associate's degree program here, as well as specialty classes. But we really have been encouraging people, most especially in the western part of Hendricks County, southern part of Montgomery County, Clay and Owen County, to look towards their Ivy Tech possibilities here in Greencastle. And I think we're seeing the fruits of that active labor, saying that, this is a pretty easy commute. We have classes to offer you, and we would love to have you come and join our campus here. So it's nice to see that 12% increase on this semester.
And I wonder if that has anything to do with we talked a lot about jobs, and at one point we were taking a look at the, and this was maybe a year or so ago. I have to go back and ask the mayor vault and see when that was, but when the jobless rate was very high for this area, and then now just see a report where it's low and one of the lowest in this part of the state.
Right, it is. It has gone down considerably. And you're right, when we had folks that weren't able to find employment, many of them were going back to school and looking for ways to be retrained, and some of them have been extremely successful at finding new career opportunities for themselves. But I think what we're seeing now is people are understanding the value of an Ivy Tech education, even if they want their dream is to go on to a four-year institution, that because of grants that are offered, state and federal funding that is offered, they can go very inexpensively and get a two-year degree that can then transfer into a four-year institution, as well as the folks who are looking for a very specific career path that can be found at Ivy Tech Community College, too. So I think it's twofold. I think people are seeing, because of the cost of college, that this is a really an effective way to get that college experience and then to move on to a four-year program, as well as to get specific training. So it's nice to see the facility being utilized. We've been delighted to have it here and to see more and more people taking advantage of it. I think not only are the Ivy Tech folks pleased, but most certainly we in the community are also.
We also always get an update about the repaving downtown work. It looks like Vine Street getting pretty close.
Vine Street is getting pretty close. We have our construction meeting coming up still this week, but my understanding is, in talking with them over the weekend, they've been working some Saturdays to try and keep the project moving forward. And I'm not going to hold my breath because it depends on weather, it depends on other issues, but they're hoping that they will have the sidewalks and the curbs completed on the first two blocks of that road, and that they might even be able to do the first layer of blacktopping on it, so putting that road back together again. And then we'll just have the one final block segment that still needs to happen. So they're still predicting that they're going to be on schedule. Their substantial completion date was at the end of October. They're running right now a little bit ahead of that date. And again, we'll watch the weather and see, but I think everyone's feeling pretty assured, not that the ground structures are in, and we're doing the nice things, you know, to make the road the road. But the drainage has been taken care of, and we're moving forward, and I think we're going to see a lot of progress quickly, and people will be really glad to get by the post office a little closer than they've been and get rid of the inconvenience we've caused. So that project is going nicely. We're also right in the midst of our city's repaving project. We're doing about $450,000 worth of milling and paving and ADA ramps this year, and that's a effort that crosses all areas of the community. We work hard to make sure that each section, the worst roads, are taken care of to the best of our ability each year. And so we're actively creating havoc in all parts of the city right now. But hopefully by the beginning of next week, people are going to be very pleased with the outcome of their patience.
The big story, though, in my mind, though, is the continuing talk of the new community center that has been in the minds for many here and for quite a while.
Decades.
Decades. And it's an opportunity that came up when funds became available through a bond.
The need to do a bond, and that came from the state legislature, who said, you know what, we understand some of you started creating tax increment financing districts early on in the process. And if you did, and those don't have any bonds outstanding against them, we're going to talk about sunsetting those bonds in 2025. And when we look at that for a community our size, we don't capture all of the TIF revenue that we potentially could, which is very atypical of most communities in Indiana who do have these districts. We capture between 50 and 52% of that. So that for us translates into about $1.2, $1.3 million in our TIF that we've incorporated all of them. We had separate TIFs, have put them all into one. But our largest industrial TIF, we would be losing about $1 million if we let that sunset. So the thought was, we really need to have a bond out against it. Again, that's atypical. Most communities have bonded against their TIF districts as a source of repayment. So we talked in two different directions. Number one, can we finally do something with the community center that we've wanted to have for a long time? Or we always know we've got a large infrastructure list and we could use a bond to be able to tackle a lot of infrastructure projects at one time. So we started off with the Redevelopment Commission down those two roads. We knew at the end of the day, you know, the community's desire has been for that, having that community center. We also know that we can't pay to operate it. There's no way with what has happened with the whole taxing structure in the state of Indiana that we're anticipating significantly more revenues to come to be allocated to parks and recs. So I knocked on the door of the folks over in Clay County who run the Wabash Valley YMCA program, which is the Vigo County YMCA as well as the Clay County YMCA, and talked to their director, a lady by the name of Deb Ringo, and said, would you look at us? Is there a potential here? And as she told our community last week, 2 weeks ago now, that they were in for doing community focus group discussions and a community leaders breakfast to try and determine, not only do we know that there's interest because of the online survey, but what kinds of things are you looking for in a center? She said over the years they've had many communities come and talk with them about starting a Y in their community. But the difference here was that we had a plan to build the building. So she said that's why we've been spending our time on this, and we actually had a facilitator from the National Y come in and run those sessions for us so that he could begin to look at some of the issues and questions people here had, put them in a greater context than just the Greencastle Putnam County context, and help the National Y and the Wabash Valley Y try to begin to figure out, is this a good fit for them? Because ultimately, if they're to take on the responsibility to staff and program and run a facility here, they want it to be successful. And so it's good for us because, you know, sometimes you know what you want, but you don't understand what it takes to continue that want and make it reality. So having the national organization come in and not only look at sites here in our community, and they're going to be helping us, if they choose to move forward, select what's the most appropriate site that you probably will have the greatest response from your community with, and what kinds of things can you afford to offer. So while we might have ideas on what we would like to put in a building, they're probably going to come back to us if they want to pursue this further with something that's going to say, you know, we're thinking we're going to be in this with you all, but this is what we think you can afford in phase one. Not because of the bond issue, but because it's going to take X number of memberships to be able to manage this. And again, that's where the national experience is so helpful in an analysis that we internally could have guessed a lot at, but they're helping us through this process. So I think everybody left those meetings a couple of weeks ago very optimistic that we're still moving in a way that could bring us a Y, and we'll work on those infrastructure projects as time and money and energy permits, because they're not going to go away. But let's see if we can make this Y happen. So I'm hopeful, and we're looking forward to continuing the dialogue with the folks in the Wabash Valley Y system and the National Y system. And, you know, we might not get everything that folks are hoping and dreaming for, but my goodness, we're going to have something that will give a lot of people and families an opportunity for 12-month-a-year recreation and activity. So we're all we have our fingers crossed, but are optimistically hopeful and excited.
Yeah, and I can see why, because this really, from when we talked about this maybe 3 months ago to now, I mean, a lot has happened What would be that next step?
The next step is really for the evaluations to come in. I'm going to spend a little time with a group called SEER Analytics, who has done a rough analysis of various sites in the community and make sure that they're aware of some of the nuances in some of the areas of the community. It's not so much distance from the courthouse square, perhaps, as it is to where are their focuses of populations, maybe not residential, but industrial populations and people that might use a YMCA at the end of the day or at the beginning of a shift, and were those taken into account. And so we'll see what they say to us. So that will be the next step in talking to SEER Analytics about sites and making sure that they know what we know about our community and get their response to selection areas, and waiting for the folks in, again, the Wabash Valley Y to take a look at all the data that they collected. And again, the National Y is putting that together for them to analyze, and they'll put facts and figures in. I think, you know, the spirit is they would love to do it because they already run an after school program here in Greencastle, and they've done that for, goodness, I don't know, 12 years, 15 years maybe now, and they've done it extremely successfully. So they know our community. They would like to have a greater presence here, and they're hoping the numbers work, and we most certainly are hoping that they do too.
Just wondering if you heard about the or have done anything with the Regional Cities Initiative. The deadline was Monday for cities to apply for about $84 million, but it was to boost economic development.
Right.
Was that something on the agenda of
Greencastle?
Greencastle
would never rise to the top in that kind of thing. I think what they're expecting and how it was written are for regional cities to in regional areas to kind of jump up. So you look at clusters of population in communities, and you look at the Evansville area, and you look at the Fort Wayne area, and you look at the northern region in the Gary Merrillville area up in northwestern Indiana and the Indianapolis metro area, and you say, okay, now we're going to look to these regions first. And you know, at the end of the day, $84 million doesn't go very far. It's a lot of money, it truly is, but what kind of change can you affect with $84 million? And so with those pooled numbers and limited resources, you know, a community of 10,000 wasn't a player in that. Yeah. So the answer is no.
No. What else am I missing?
What else? Well, this is, you know, for our county, this is big news. This past Friday, our county council passed the local option income tax. We were one of less than half of the counties in the state that did not have a local option income tax in place that would help fund public service areas, so police and fire, 911 service, and our county had not embraced that in the past. They did at this point in time because our local 911 emergency access service needed some major upgrades in terms of equipment and computer capabilities. And in order to fund that project, which was well over $900,000, they were looking for a vehicle to help pay for that. And so that reopened the discussion on the LOAT. And so it came to a favorable end for all the communities in Putnam County as well as the county, that they did pass it, and the county is going to take its normal distribution. They had debated taking larger than the 60% initially, but they ended up saying that is what we're going to take and have some flexibility in how we spend it. I guess that's the caveat. If you move off that 60% and go to a higher percentage rate, then you're kind of locked in terms of how you spend your dollars and what your original plan was for taking out the LOAT. So for us, that means perhaps based on 2015 figures, upwards to $500,000 additional revenue for the city, which again can help in the general fund and it can help with police and fire needs. That's about $3 million of budget every year between the two public safety entities, so we can help ship some of those costs to other areas. So that's big news for us, because cities and towns don't have a way of increasing their revenues aside from fees that they can put on things. So this tax allows us to create a bit more revenue for the city, which is a positive thing. And also for the towns, it's based on population. So they have money to offset public safety needs a little bit in their communities also. So I think it's a win-win for all of us. You know, someone's first response was, well, just wait till see what it does to your paycheck. You know, in reality, with the decrease of what the state government is doing with income tax in this very modest 0.25% we're talking about here, it's going to be pretty much of a wash. People aren't going to notice it, but it is going to have a real positive impact for us. So that is very exciting. And so that's breaking news.